Talking Games Podcast.
Welcome back. This is episode 113 of the Talking Games Podcast for GamesInquirer.com. Hope you're all doing very well. Happy Sunday. It is the 13th of August, 2023. It's been a bit of a long week. We weren't here last week because I had game developer stuff. I will be dropping some info in a little bit. Let's stay tuned for that. We have got almost a full crew this week. Nightmare, Bam, and Chloe. Chloe, welcome back. It's been a while.
Yeah, and my reappearance is only going to be short for now.
Yeah.
But, yeah, you've got me back today. That's all that matters. I've just had a lot of... Yeah. Essentially, we've been moving house.
Are you moving in with your partner, aren't you?
No. Right. Basically, Dad did some council house swapping thing, which is why I've not been here
because
we were doing that. And then I might, fingers crossed, if it gets confirmed, be moving into a house with my brother and sister at the end of this month.
Oh, that's all right. I did a council house swap.
Hence the limited number of appearances from me. Because
that's all right. Busy house moving.
Yeah.
We got Bam in. Bam, how you been, bud?
I'm chilling, man. Still waiting on his baby to come any day now. Been running through the entire Yakuza series while we in the downtime of August. There's nothing really big coming out until Armored Core or Sea of Stars. So that's really it, man. Just gaming, waiting,
Yeah, next week there is a couple of games coming out. WrestleQuest, I've been playing the preview for that. I've had the press preview, which is about 6 hours long. About halfway through. I'll talk about that in a minute. We've got Nightmare here as well. How you doing, buddy?
Good.
Yeah, it's been a while since we spoke. It's been like nearly 5-6 weeks, something like that.
I didn't think it was that long.
It's been about that long. You was off for about 3 weeks, and we didn't do one last week, so I think about 4 or 5 weeks, roughly.
I thought it was like 4, so...
Yeah. Welcome back, everybody. Don't forget, check out the website, GamesInquirer.com. You can find us on all the socials, /GamesInquirer, everywhere. We are on Threads. We are on Blue Sky. We are everywhere, pretty much. We do have Threads. If you guys are not already following us on Instagram, you can find us through there as well. Our Instagram numbers have remained stable, about 500 or so. But if you haven't yet jumped over to Threads and you are thinking about it, don't forget remember to give us a follow. I am waiting for them to drop a desktop version because I can't stand the mobile version. It has to do it with my phone to upload stuff on there as well. I've got a couple of new videos up for Atlas Fallen, which is a game I've just reviewed. Part 3 launched yesterday, went up yesterday. Please go give that a watch if you haven't already. I have got also part 2 of The Expanse. I've got episodes 1 and 2 because part 1 didn't upload right away. And it took forever, and then the audio was a bit crummy, but I've got it working. I'm going to be uploading both of them later on today. Go check that out. We've also got another 3 reviews to drop this week as well. F1 Manager 2023, thank you to Frontier for sending me that. That's going to be my next one. I've got the preview for WrestleQuest, which has now been delayed until the 22nd, so I've got a bit of time to get that preview out, as well as... another one. I've still got to upload my Valiant review. I've been meaning to do that this week. We have also got Fault Solace reviews going to be dropping on the 22nd as well. I did get 2 codes for that, and I'm thinking about giving the other one away. It is EU PS5, but it's the new Fault Solace game, the one from Dead Villagers and Fallen Leaves, Troy Baker as the lead character. I don't know, Bam, whether you can download an EU code. If so, I might give it to you.
I don't know if Sony has their thing open, the source code open or whatever it is that they do. Nintendo has it. Now you can download Japanese games and stuff. Like, I don't know if you can do that with PlayStation. But I haven't even heard of that. What is that? Some kind of indie game or something? That's what I'm saying. Like, there's no games coming out until the end of the month.
Fault Solace has kind of gone onto the radar. It was shown at the Game Awards last year with Troy Baker. It's also voiced by Roger Clark and Julia Brown. It's a big, sci-fi... You're on Mars, sort of like this planet. It's a horror, psychological horror game. It was premiered at the Game Awards. They did a big presentation with Jeff Keighley on it. It's kind of fallen silent, and the game is now due out in about 10 days' time. We're going to have
That doesn't sound like it might do that well. Like, where's the marketing at for this game?
I have no idea, and that's what I've been worrying as well. We have posted a couple of articles about Fort Solace, but they're just, like, the actual traffic, like the big presentations, the big trailers, we haven't really seen that. And that's why I'm kind of worried that this game is going to kind of fall off. It has got its audience. Our news that we've published has done pretty well on it. But I don't know whether there's going to be a larger audience size they're going to gravitate towards it, because they haven't really done any first-party marketing themselves.
Yeah, I've seen nobody
talking about it. There's no interviews, there's no... Yeah. I mean, you'd expect with games like this, considering Troy Baker's in it, who's like one of the biggest voice actors in the industry.
Troy Baker and Roger Clark. Like, we haven't heard from Roger Clark since Red Dead 2, so, you know, it seems like people will be looking forward to his next, you know.
Yeah, and Julia Brown, who's been... What was Julia Brown in? I'm thinking Last of Us, but I don't think that's right.
No, she wasn't in Last of Us.
You've got three massive voice actors in this game, and it was heavily marketed and heavily promoted, but it's not been given the first party marketing I would have expected, which is shocking.
Right.
But I'm looking forward to seeing how reviews do and how well the game is received when it launches in about 10 days.
Yeah. Did you ever look into the Expanse?
I have. I'm halfway through episode 2 right now. As far as time I'm recording, the episode will be up tomorrow. But I'm really loving it, and I'm been trying to find everything because I missed one of the key components that you have to find in episode 1. I couldn't find it, and that's kind of screwed me because my pilot Khan has now lost her arm.
Oh snap!
Yeah. So I'm gonna have to go find a way to might go back and do it again. But episode 1 and 2 will be up tomorrow on my YouTube channel. It's the major _GE from me on YouTube. What have you guys been playing this week?
Yakuza series, man. I've ran through like the entire. Well, not the first game. I think I started the first game in January and I finished it. But 2, 3, 4. I'm now on 5, and it's been like a week, because like I said, I've just been sitting around the house waiting for this baby, so I don't want to be going out too far. I've been playing that and Grand Theft Auto 4, man. I started replaying that as well, and I'm also playing Pikmin 4 still, so.
Not bad. I will say, I completed, obviously, the Yakuza series, one of my favorite JRPGs I think ever made. It's brilliant. There is a couple of games in that series which are dominant. But there are several which are really, really... Majority of them are really, really good. I can't remember the latest one they did, but there was a massive bug where my game kept crashing every 2 minutes. It still doesn't work. That was like a year ago. I've tried playing it since, and it still isn't working. But the other game...
Yeah, that's
like
a samurai game, right?
Yeah, I mean, you basically... It's not Kiru this part in that one. It's like you're the guy with the big afro. I can't remember his name.
Are you talking about Like a Dragon?
Yeah,
I think his name is Ichiban or something like that. I haven't got to that, but... Yeah.
Yeah. I've played all the ones with Kiru. I'm going back and waiting for the man who lost his name or something.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I'm going to be going back and playing that when that comes out again. I'll probably go into the previous one and try and catch up a little bit. That first one with Ichiban, I can't remember what it was. It's the one where you're chasing... The first missions where you're chasing a guy through an alleyway. And I keep the game crashes every time I go past the same vending machine. And I've had enough. It got really irritating. The other game I'm playing is Atlas Fallen. Reviews have come back. They're not great. I really enjoyed it. And I think there are several other people that really enjoyed it. I gave it an 8 out of 10. Some people were giving it 3.5 and 3s. And I don't think that's correct. I think it deserves a lot better. Traversing in that game is tremendous. It's sand surfing, and you can glide, and it's almost like flying, not quite. You're basically gliding through the air. But you sand surf, and it's just so smooth, and the combat, the challenges, and everything are really, really fun.
Aside from enemies inside the game, what's on the map? Because every time I look at the gameplay, I remember when I first seen the game, I thought the game was going to be trash just off the rip, because you're just in a desert fighting enemies. That's what it looks like. What's in the world? Like, what is there to do besides fight?
So you've got different collectibles. So it's not just enemies you're fighting. You've also got side quests that are hanging out there. You'll find random people saying, please go help our friends. He's got lost in the desert. Or we need your help to rebuild these bridges. Can you go get a load of wood? And you basically need to resource supply and everything. There's also stuff like you're basically powering up and getting new powers and new cosmetic items. You can go do side. There's tons of side quests. They're all over the map. But the map is basically...
But is a side quest like Final Fantasy 16 to when you go to a side quest, somebody tells you to go get something or go find somebody?
There is a great deal of fetch quests, but there are other missions out there as well. Like, I did one the other day where they needed me to carry water back, and then I had to got into a battle, and I had to go into a cave, and there was, like, had a conversation, and the game is kind of had, like, an impending doom, because there's, like, this giant thing floating through the sky trying to find you, and you don't really want to get caught with it. And there's side missions, and everything you do is kind of driven by that narrative. The narrative starts off very strong. It reminds me a lot of Prince of Persia. But then they try to do it as individual stories all collaborating into one, and it doesn't always fit. And I think the main issue with the game is the fact of the story missions, because it starts off very strong, it has a solid foundation for a story, but then it kind of divulges and goes all over the place, and it never sticks to one thing. Like, they should have really, like, kind of nailed down the direction before they started adding other stuff in. And the characters, and the side characters, which are supposed to drive the story forward, are really bland and boring.
Are there any cities or towns inside this game, or is it just you?
There is. I mean, you've got one giant city, which is known as Bastengar, which is basically an underground city, which is run by the sun god Thelos. But you've got loads of different, like, smaller encampments. They're basically like cities, but they're like castles. Essentially, that you is the main area hub for that one quarter of the map that you go in. But I will say the map in itself, it's split into four, but it doesn't feel like you're ever restricted. It feels massive, and they've designed it in such a way you could go for miles and you wouldn't really even realise. Like, there isn't really any invisible walls. It just, the first part of it, when you first start the tutorial and you're looking for the thief, that is kind of restrictive because you've only got a small area. You just basically have to jump up onto the ledge and catch the thief. That's it. But when you start then going through all the tunnels and it's gliding across the sand, across the desert, it feels massive. You don't ever feel like it's claustrophobic in any way. It's kind of designed a bit like a roguelike, but there isn't that element of that there's restricted boundaries or invisible walls. It still feels free and open, and you can still it still feels like this. It is the desert, which is designed brilliantly. Not many people could have played it off like that. It doesn't feel like a game with boundaries, even though it has boundaries. And there's different things you have to find, and everything's spread out, and it's not like you're not getting pointed. I mean, the light system, the way they have it, is essentially like Assassin's Creed, just a little bit. We have like sort of like eagle vision, but it's god vision, essentially. You'll see like beams of light, and that's where the next target is, or the next item to find, or the next side quest. Like, there'll be a light in the air, and you have to go towards that light. There's no directions or anything. There's not a little shitty Ubisoft HUD. You basically just head. It feels very free, and the combat and the traversal are brilliant. It's just, I think the one thing that really holds this game back is the narrative, and I think that's the thing that a lot of people don't like. And so I've seen people calling it Redfall, and that's just stupid. It's not Redfall. But it is a really, really good game, and it does deserve it needs some more time in the oven. I think they should have left it another couple of months before they released it, because that story needs to be perfect, and it wasn't. But, you know, for the first time, this Deck 13 have ever produced an open-world game. And it is an open world. It's a semi-open world. They've gone from action RPGs to try and implementing that in a larger space. They're basically giving you a game more legroom. And I think that's a commendable way they've done it. They have the grounds there to make a really good open-world game. They're one of the few indie studios out there that can make a really good open-world game. Because they're basically just giving their games, they're brilliant, they've got brilliant stories, but they've always had kind of felt kind of restricted because it's always on a linear path. This game, they're trying to expand it and make you have feel like anything's possible. For a first attempt, it's not bad. They just really needed to nail that story down, because in an open world setting, it doesn't quite fit when it's not linear. So they've gone from having a linear story to having an open world story, but still having a linear, it's still being linear. So it doesn't fit the way that they've done the writing. If they'd done it as an open world game with an open, expansive story, then it would have worked better than trying to fit an action RPG narrative into an open world system. It doesn't work. And I think that's where they went wrong. But I will say the people saying it's middle trash or terrible or garbage, to the several people that I've had conversations with this week, and we've gained followers off because people were laughing our ass off, play the game first before you judge a game whether you like it or not. Don't call a game trash because you've seen the trailer on YouTube. Trailer.
That's all you're going to see on Twitter, man. That's all you're going to see on Twitter, mate, is people definitively calling games horrible or making those types of accusations without even touching the game. You're going to see that all the time. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I still stand by the thing. I still stand by my statement. Originally, it's a terrific game. They just, for a first attempt, it's not bad. They do need to kind of move away from that linear RPG style they're known for and kind of move more into open world. They need to hire more essentially people with experience in open world games because it isn't the right way of doing it. But we're going to be talking about Rockstar Games this week because they've made some incredibly stupid statements and done some incredibly stupid things. I will say this again because I've had arguments with people who don't understand what Rockstar is. I know we've gone into this before, but I think it needs to be said and people need to be reminded. This is not the same Rockstar as what we had with GTA 5 or Red Dead or Bully. This is not the same Rockstar. The majority of the staff left around 2016, 2017. Leslie Benzies took quite a few people with him. Their key writing team, the ones that were responsible for the story and the gameplay elements and the artwork and the audio, are all gone. There are key people still there. There are people still at Rockstar who were there before. There's just about 90% of the staff that were there have now left to go work on other things. So Rockstar decided, rather than trying to hire developers with proven track record and experience, because all they were interested in at that point was making as much money out of microtransactions on GTA Online as possible, they've hired a bunch of guys who straight out of university, no experience, never worked on the game in any capacity on anything, and they're literally just because they have degrees. And there's a bunch of newcomers, which is why there's a lot of popular complaints. GTA Online is crap, the story's terrible, the DLC is boring. It's always the same argument. But anyone argues asking, why can't they release Take-Two? Why can't Take-Two make their own Red Dead? Where's this remaster? And I'll tell you exactly why. It's because it's a port. People don't understand the differences between port or remaster these days. And I'm not defending Rockstar in the slightest for what they did this week. But they're releasing Red Dead Redemption 1, the original game, for $50 on Switch on PS4 with basically nothing on it. It comes with a base game for the DLC. The first DLC, The Undead Nightmare, which I thought was better than the main story, to be honest. But the online components, cross-play, graphical updates, non-existent. And they're claiming, this came from Strauss Zelnick, that $50 for a 12-year-old game with absolutely no added additions is commercially accurate.
The problem is, it's not. But in terms of the way things are at the moment, they might actually have a point.
I mean, the Xbox 360 version is available on Xbox One with backwards compatibility, and you can play it on Series X enhanced with all the graphical updates and the online and the next-gen graphics and technically not cross-play anymore, but you can play it online with other players on Xbox Series X because Series X is upscaled from Xbox One because Xbox One has the backwards compatibility, so does Series X. But to release it on PS4, who seriously is playing this game on PS4 anymore? Why would you release it on PS4? Why not PS5 of the Japanese version?
I think it's because, well, for one, I'm not going to blame this on the developers at Rockstar because they're not the ones who made the call. All this shit is coming from Strauss Zelnick. It's coming from the higher ups. This is like a Bungie versus Activision deal when Activision was telling Bungie, we need you to do this with the test every store, with the microtransactions. Y'all need to put out the DLC here. Y'all need to do this. Giving people deadlines and knowing that they can't reach the deadline. So whenever you get the content, it's bare bones or it's not finished. I'm putting all this on the higher ups of Rockstar Games, not on the developers. But I think that PS4 version, I think if you have a PS5, you can still play it. It's just going to be the PS4 version, which is 4K 30 or something, I think.
It's the PS2 version.
There is no PS2 version, Major. The game came out on PS3 and Xbox 360.
It also released on PS2, so dude.
It did not come out on PS2. You can Google it right now. Red Dead Redemption never launched on PS2.
Hold on. I'll turn my VPN off so I can actually see what the...
You shouldn't even have to Google this, man.
Oh, there we go. I'll turn my VPN off for a second. Sorry about it. PS2, 2000... Oh, no, that was Red Dead Revolver. My bad.
Yeah, I know.
I read that wrong.
PS2 version, so... But,
PS3, sorry. I read it wrong. It's Red Dead Revolver.
But them coming out with a port for this game versus when all the leaks and all the leakers had come out saying that there was a remaster. When Red Dead 2 came out, all the people that was going inside looking at the source codes and looking at the code of Red Dead 2 said that there was a Red Dead 1 remake inside Red Dead 2. So for them to come out with a port, that's the reason why people are angry. But again, I'm not going to put none of this on the developers at Rockstar. This, like, all this stuff is coming from the higher up. They just trying to get a dollar.
I was just
agreeing with Bam. This isn't really the sort of decision the developers are going to make, is it?
I will add, this is also the fact that Rockstar, porting is not easy, and porting is a very difficult thing to do. It takes a lot of time because you're basically trying to upscale things, but I think them saying, oh, this was such a hard effort is wrong, and the reason they're can't do it themselves and they hire out third parties is because nobody at Rockstar knows how to port, because they're all a bunch of newcomers.
I wouldn't say that, Major. I would say that it's because they got their whole team trying to finish GTA 6, or if they're working on GTA Online stuff. Because
they've got 200 staff there. But
Rockstar Games are the biggest games inside the industry. We're not talking about Ubisoft. We're not talking about Naughty Dog. We're not talking about 343. Nobody in the industry makes games on par with what Rockstar is doing. So if they try to compete with themselves, why would they take off 100 people to do a port for Red Dead 1 when they could just outsource the thing, just like they did with GTA Trilogy? It's like, this isn't anything new. They didn't even port or do the remaster for L.A. Noire. They also outsourced that, which came out years ago.
What happened with the GTA Trilogy, though.
Exactly, but that's why I'm saying it's got to, like, all these, because if you think about what you said earlier about how the old guard is gone, Leslie Benzies, the Hauser brothers, I feel like if those guys were still there, they would have fought against putting out something like that would tarnish what those developers over there or what Rockstar Games have been doing for decades. I don't think that they would have put out something like that if, or at least they would have tried to fight against it. Again, this is Strauss Zelnick, man. I'm just trying to get as much money as possible, because even though that game came out buggy and messed up, those games sold millions because people love GTA 3, Vice City, and San Andreas. Everybody loved that. I went out and bought that game day one.
Would you say that was more of a cash grab? Like, because they never really fixed it.
That's all it is a cash grab. But that's what I'm saying, though, and it's coming from the higher ups over there, because, again, the developers aren't making these decisions. This is coming from Strauss Zelnick and everybody else over there who knows what they have on their hands. They know, even though people are being super outraged about this port for Red Dead 1 coming to PS4 and is not upscaled or is not a remaster, people are going to go out and buy that. That game is going to sell millions.
I think that's a big problem as well, because they're just basically agreeing with everything. Rockstar can feed them a turd and they'll eat it and go, that's great, give me more, and then keep crapping in their mouth. It's the catch-22 with Rockstar is that they still got this mentality that they're going to be a big studio. We haven't seen anything from them that I would say is indicative of the studio still being the same Rockstar, considering all the guys that were there who made Rockstar, and now God.
Have now left.
Yeah, you just got to hope
the writing team, the development team, the programmers, the, you know, the audio engineers, all the key people that made GTA 5 what it is are left.
So you just gotta hope that some of them developers instilled some of them values, because I'm not gonna jump on the train until we get GTA 6 and if that thing is trash, then it's trash. Because even if you look at Hideo Kojima, everybody puts him on a pedestal and pretends that he's the only person on a goddamn developer team for Metal Gear Solid. He is not the only developer there creating Metal Gear Solid. Without him, yes, you may not have a 100% Metal Gear Solid because of some of his creative directions, but Metal Gear Solid is still going to be Metal Gear Solid even if Kojima is not there. So I'm going to have to wait to see if GTA 6 comes out, and if it's trash, hey, man, then Rockstar Games is dead and gone. But based off of what we've seen when all that stuff leaked out, even the leaked gameplay footage that leaked out from GTA 6 about a year ago looks better than most AAA games that come out today.
That is true.
And that was crazy.
I would agree. Although, I mean, graphics-wise, yeah, they've always been really good at it. But it's the story that makes a Rockstar game a Rockstar game. And if they haven't got the right... I mean, yeah, you got like Red Dead, Bully, GTA,
yeah.
even the Max Payne games. Like, the story was brilliant, but if they do not have the writers there who can legitimately write to that standard, because obviously a lot of the writing team now are students, that's what's going to concern me. It's not the graphics. They can make a 2D pixel game. If the story's crap, then I don't want to play it. That's
but you know what most people are playing, though, nowadays? People aren't even concerned with the story. All they want, all these kids want, all these new people want that's going to go out there in droves and buy this game. Me and you, people like me and you, people who love Rockstar because we know what they bring to the table when it comes to their story writing and when it comes to their story direction, they're not focused on us no more. I hope I'm wrong, but I think that they're going to be dialed in, all in on this GTA, like, online BS, because if you look at where gaming is going, is going towards all these live services. And if they can dial up, you know, just jump in 100% on GTA Online, I don't know, man. Me and you we might be out of luck.
Well, I'm hoping they don't, because I hate GTA Online now. It's gotten so crap. But they also reiterate your plans for a turning point in next year. So we may actually have a release date leak. They kind of renewed speculation that it would be releasing in March 2025 at the latest, because Strauss Zemnick took to an earnings call and reported that next quarter, which begins in April of next year, would be a far larger revenue income, would have a far larger revenue income than previous year. They announced net bookings of $1.2 billion for the quarter, which is on the high end of the expectations. It reiterated its previous prediction between 5.4 to 5.5 billion for the entire fiscal year 2024, which ends in March 2025, which kind of speaks to me that the game is coming next November, which is what we thought anyway, because they did already say end of 2024, 2025. Now we kind of have confirmation from this earnings call that we are looking at a November release next year. What's that?
I was just sort of finishing your sentence.
Oh, thank you. Stacey does that. It's really annoying. Anyway, but he was also in the interview. He talked about the Switch 2 not being backwards compatible. Said it was a great contract with players. I don't know why he's talking about the Switch. He was talking about the next Switch, which we know is in development.
Mm-hmm.
That's looking at a mid-summer, possibly September, October time next year. That will be releasing, which is a bit soon. Considering they haven't really done any marketing campaigns, but I am expecting around February, which is the next official Nintendo Direct, the one they have every year, they're going to announce the Switch 2 properly, unless they do another one, as I predicted, in October. Otherwise, we are going to get a big one in February next year.
And they said no back compat to the Switch 1.
No, there is no backwards compat. We do have an article on the
website. No way. Ain't no way they will be willing to. If they do that, they're going to lose so much money.
They did say the Switch games, the games that are on Switch now, because there is the thing about the transporting all the accounts over. So if you have an account on Switch, you're going to be able to transfer it to Switch too. What they never mentioned in that initial announcement was that there was going to be backwards compatibility with games. They just said you'd be able to transfer your account over. So I don't know what's happening now, but if they, by judging by what the Strauss-Zelnick has said to games industry, by the sounds of it, the Nintendo Switch will not have backwards compatibility.
That is stupid.
Yeah, they don't even sound right to me, man.
Because
know.
You're not going to... The people who are going to be interested in buying the Switch 2 will probably already have the original Switch anyway. Will not want to spend a shit ton of money on the same bloody games. They'll just go, right, fine, I'll just play this on my original Switch then, whatever.
Yeah.
And then
we do know that there are internal sources at Nintendo. We have spoken to them already, to our own sources at Nintendo, and they did confirm dev kits have gone out to key studios, Pokemon, Pokemon Company and others, the guys that make all the Pokemon games, the ones that make the Zelda games, all their key internal studios and their partners as well, have all received dev kits for the next Switch. They have said there is a large stockpile of new consoles available day one. They are increasing their stockpiles from what they previously had last version. We've also found out that it will be available with docked and portable. The suggestion is the console could launch with an LCD screen instead of the OLED screen. So they're basically just... What was the point of releasing Nintendo Switch OLED if you're going to go back and do
that? If they're going to go back anyway. Actually, I have an answer for that. So that a few months after the release, or maybe a couple of years after the release of the Switch 2, they'll do Switch 2 OLED.
I don't know, man.
I'm not buying into any of these reports, none of these leaks, because
that sounds like that's where they're going to go with this, to try and rinse more money out of something that they now decided to almost make pointless with this whole thing about games not being backwards compatible.
I mean the backwards, but they never mentioned, there was no confirmation whether the console will be backwards compatible. But obviously they are wanting the current Switch user base to switch over to the new console. There will be account transfers when the new one launches. The only issue is that they never talked about games, they only talked about your account. So they made no mention that backwards compatibility was a thing. They've obviously talked about the LCD because they want to make it more affordable. They want, obviously, the console, the new Switch, will be compatible or relevant with the PS4 and Xbox One graphics and speeds. They're also increasing the internal memory storage this time around. So the base model, I think, is, 100 and something gig for the whole thing. But they are looking at increasing that so it's more in line with the PS4 and the Xbox One. But the only issue is that they never talked about backwards compatibility. Now, Strauss-Zelnick has had an interview with Games Industry where he acknowledged that the fact that the Switch doesn't have backwards compatibility. So he's kind of outed it for them. I don't know whether he's telling the truth. That could be just hyperbole. Or it could be the fact that he's heard something. He possibly may have been looking to bring a game to the next Switch console, considering it has parity with the PS4 and the Xbox One. But there is no confirmation. As far as Nintendo haven't said it was backwards compatibility. It sounds like, from what he said, is that it doesn't.
Yeah, I don't know if I believe any of this, man. It seems like every console generation, every time the Nintendo comes out, you got all these people coming out, and then they always come out and pretend that they know some shit about something, and then they never know.
Yeah, I mean, Strauss-Zelnick is one person I probably would listen to, considering he's
CEO. I'm not about to listen to nothing he got to say after everything he's been... This dude been feeding us nothing but bullshit for the past almost decade, bro. I'm not listening to nothing until I see some paint on the wall. The ink is dry, man, because all these people come out and then they always claim to be very reputable. But then as soon as it seems like everybody can always get information on the Xbox and the PlayStation. But I don't know if it's because people are scared of Nintendo because of Nintendo's lawsuits and how they always go after people. I just don't see how any of this can be true, and Strauss-Zelnick doesn't get any type of blowback for basically coming out and giving information on a product that isn't ready or that Nintendo isn't ready to even speak about. I just don't see that.
Yeah. Well, we'll find out in the next few months or so. Around between October, either be October or February when they formally announce it. We'll find out then. And like, it'll probably be one of the first things they confirm, because they know that people are going to be asking for it, and there's going to be a huge community. They're going to be very, very outraged if it doesn't. So they're going to have to...
The thing's going to flop. That thing's going to flop if it's not backwards compatible. Like, believe it or not, the Switch just came out in, what, 2017? We only in 2023. So,
a lot of people... I don't think it's going to flop, but it's not going to do as well.
I think it'll do... If they doesn't have backwards compatibility, they'll do a Wii U.
Yeah, exactly, and that's a flop. It's like people forget how bad the Wii U did and what type of and where that left Nintendo at. Nintendo was, they was almost out the door after the Wii U. That Wii U killed them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they almost went bankrupt after the Wii U.
Exactly.
Because it, I think it was like something like 1 million units sold. It's absolute shit. People still playing the Wii.
I think the lifetime sold, like, overall to this day is, like, around 15 to 20 million. Like, nobody, compared to the numbers that the Nintendo Wii did and then them doing the Wii U, man, tragic.
Yeah. First week of sales was really, really quite bad.
Mm-hmm.
It was, like, 2 million within a week. They were expecting a lot more than that. We're going to be talking about Russia quick, because there has been news regarded the Ukraine developers who are fighting back against Russia and Putin, one of which was the author for Metro, was handed an 8-year prison term for speaking out about a Russian invasion. Thankfully, he's not in the country. He is the author behind the Metro book series and video games. He wrote Metro Exodus script. He's a wanted man in Russia. For claiming he spread false information about Russia's armed forces. Dmitry Glukovsky, whose book led to the Metro 2033 game, is also responsible for writing the sequels for Last Light and Exodus, was sentenced to 8 years in prison by a Moscow court. He's been looking to serve that in probably one of those prison camps we hear all about in the middle of the Arctic desert. However, Glukovsky isn't in Russia and was trialed in his absence. He's been a vocal critic of the Kremlin, was labelled a foreign agent in 2022. He left in April that year. He wrote about the war in Ukraine. After Russia invaded Ukraine, lawmakers passed a bill that punished those spreading fake information. I'll use that in quotations. They revealed plans to release a new entry in the post-apocalyptic Metro series, which will be working on a story. That was in 2019. Apparently, he's nearing completion. The next game was confirmed in November 2020. But he is currently working on a new Metro game. I don't know how far he's gotten into that or where he is in the moment, because I think because of the war in Ukraine.
It's probably all kind of stopped.
Yeah. For now, I think the game will be coming out. We also know Stalker 2, which is a Ukrainian studio. That game is still coming this year, according to Distributor listing. It's the long-delayed shooter. I have been speaking with the devs at GSC World, and the Stalker 2 developers have been having conversations with them for the last several months, keeping up to date with them. They are a lovely bunch of people. Several of them are hiding. They're still in Ukraine, so they can't work. But they're working off laptops in bunkers. So these guys are absolute bamps, the guys that are staying in Ukraine. I don't know how you would ever be able to do that in an active war zone, still continue to work on a game. It's just insane. But it's possible that your placeholder, apparently this December 1st, is the game set to launch. We do know Stalker 2 will also be at Gamescom this year. That's going to launch on the 22nd also. It's going to be at the Gamescom show. Those are the guys that aren't in Ukraine that will be going to Gamescom. Obviously, yeah, just to make sure that people understand that. Heart of Chernobyl is currently scheduled for a December 1st, 2023 release on Xbox and PC. They originally planned for release in April. Obviously, the war, they got delayed until June, and then it's been delayed again. Those who were based in Kiev prior to Russia's invasion, some of which, most of the studios, partially located to the Czech Republic, but there are still guys in Ukraine right now. I have spoken to a couple of the guys who are actually on the front line fighting. I want to wish everybody at GSC World, if you are listening to this, and I will special note to the Stalker 2 developers still in Ukraine, if there's anything that we can do, if you need care packages or anything, send me an email. My email is on the blog, but I'll give it to you anyway. It's hello@gamesinquiry.com. The fact that you guys are spending your days fighting an invading force and then going back and working on a video game is one of the most badass things I've ever heard of, quite frankly. I don't know how they're doing it, and I don't think I would have the strength to volunteer effort in Ukraine to fight for your country whilst also working on a game and doing developer diaries and marketing and all the other stuff they're doing. It's just unbelievable. Strength that must take. Go give GSC Game World and Stalker 2 some love. They are absolutely incredible bunch of people, and they deserve all the praise they're getting. When we come back from Deals of the Week, I'm going to be talking about Baldur's Gate 3. And the reason we're going to be talking about it is because apparently they're getting sued.
Oh,
yeah. For making a good game.
Oh, great.
This should be fun. In the back of a second. That's the thing.
Da 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 da. It deals of the week. If you don't find what you want, then
sorry,
I don't
we can't
know.
Help you out.
Yeah, sorry, we can't help you
week.
Out.
Kicking us off this week, Far Cry 5 on PS4 via the Game Collection is just £6.95. It's an alternative option to the deal currently on Amazon. Those without Prime membership not looking to spend £25. And get it delivered free. You can grab it here for just £6.95 with free shipping. Exoblade Chronicles Definitive Edition on Nintendo Switch. Brand new. It's being sold by Crazy Prices Outlet on eBay. You can get it for £27.75 with free shipping. It is brand new and sealed. The cover is in Italian, but the gameplay is English. So don't worry too much if you can't understand what it says on the box. You can get 3 months of Xbox Live Gold membership right now on Xbox One and 360 for £5.79 on CD keys. It might be worth stocking up on this before prices change. Horizon Zero Dawn Complete Edition, God of War, and Last of Us Remasters right now is available for PS Plus members until the 19th of August. You can get that for £7.99 as the PlayStation Hits version on the PlayStation Store. Kingdom Come Deliverance Royal Edition on PS4. That deal is expiring on the 16th of August. But you can get it on PlayStation Store right now for £6.99. It includes the open world RPG Kingdom Come Deliverance and all released DLCs for the game as well. Call of Duty Vanguard on PS5. It's exclusive right now on Amazon.co.uk. You will need a VPN if you are not based in the UK. But you can get that right now for £15.76. That is Call of Duty Vanguard on PS5. Gotham Knights this week on Xbox Series X is just £15.95 with Amazon deals with free shipping. It is free delivery though for Prime members. It's a nice discount if you've had your eye on this one for a while. Greedfall Gold Edition on PS5 though on Rare Waves is £14.41 with free shipping. It's the most complete edition as well, so you grab that quickly. Zool Redimensioned right now on PC and Steam Deck. It's just £2.31 via Fanatical. That deal is expiring on the 20th of August. If you're on Halo Infinite, you can get a free armor coating DLC until the 22nd of August. Potion Permit right now is available at limited stores for Switch at Smith's Toy Superstore for just £9.99. The Quarry on Xbox One via the Game Collection is just £8.95. That is only on Xbox One. I do believe you can play it on Xbox Series X. Double check that if you can. Bloodstained Ritual of the Night on PS4 on the Game Collection is £8.95 with free shipping. It is a gothic horror action side-scrolling RPG set in 19th century England. I love Bloodstained. It is absolutely one of my favourite games. Go pick that up. Yoku's Island Express right now. That deal is expiring on the 11th September, so you have some time. But the Nintendo eShop right now is just £3.19. That's insane. Resident Evil 2 Standard Edition you can get for £5.99 and Deluxe for £6.99 via CD keys on Steam. For just both games, it will set you back around £12. That's not bad at all.
You can also find a compatible 128 MB PS2 memory card stick for PS2 if you still have one of those consoles. They're being sold by the Console Gamer Gear on eBay for £4.75. Last up, Away, your PS5 free bonus content this week with a PlayStation soundtrack, art book and more. Using the code at Perp Games, Sugar Glider, there's SUGARGLIDER, a physical copy of Away on PS5, fantastic game. Perk Games is a great publisher, it's definitely worth going and have a look at that. A couple of quick things though before we finish. Armored Core 6 Fires of Rubicon Launch Edition on PS4, 5, Xbox One and Series X. You can get £10 back in reward points at the game collection for just £49.95 with free shipping. Nine Monkeys of Shaolin and Ash of the Gods and Redeemer Bundle on Nintendo Switch Digital. It's £5.24 on the Nintendo eShop. Deals expiring on the 17th of August. And last up, promise, Lego Star Wars The Skywalker Saga on Nintendo Switch right now on the eShop. It's just £16.49. That's all for your deals of the week.
Da 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 da, it deals of the week. If you don't find what you want, then...
Sorry,
we can't
help you out.
Yeah, sorry, we can't help you out.
Welcome back. We're going to be talking about Baldur's Gate 3 for a sec. I've got to speak about this game because this new story just dropped today. And it's kind of shocking that apparently developers are angry at Larian Studios for making a masterpiece of a game. Because now they have this, they think their customers are going to have such high expectations, their games are never going to sell well. That's really stupid. But apparently, a lawsuit is being filed against Larian Studios. And
why?
Apparently the studio has reported that it's a complete and utter fabrication for the game being too good. The reason that they are apparently somebody's surrounding a lawsuit. Someone has issued a lawsuit on TikTok today. The video in question claims big name developers from Activision Blizzard, Ubisoft, and EA are suing Larian for the crime of unfairly raising player expectations to a level that is both unreasonable and detrimental to their business.
How true is this?
I don't know. I'm going to say take this with a pinch of salt for the moment. But
I was going to say, did you just say you found this on TikTok?
You got to look at your sources, man. God. You got to look at where you got that article from, because I'm not about to waste my time talking about this, man. That shit don't even sound true.
Well, apparently, there is rumors spreading around social media that this is accurate. I'm going to say take it with a pinch of salt. There's a moment this is just a rumor. But apparently, according to this person, they are creating controversy. They admitted that it was satirical, but that has led to rumors that other people are believing this, and it is going around Twitter and Facebook and Threads, for that matter. I did see this morning on Threads. That a lawsuit is likely to be filed against them. Which this obviously a rumour. Some people are spreading it for jokes. But, yeah. If you are reading this, take it with a great deal of salt. Or a great pinch of salt. That this isn't true. At least for the time being. I don't think it is. But we have heard those criticisms as well. That some developers have come out and said this. I mean, even from IGN, bam. They were saying that Baldur's Gate 3 is so good, other developers are panicking.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't seen anybody from Naughty Dog. I haven't seen anybody from Ubisoft. I don't know if they go into these little nooks and crannies and finding these little indie devs. Of course, the indie dev is going to be scared. But I haven't seen anybody in the industry make any of these claims. Because, again, Naughty Dog exists. Rockstar Games exists. These are the pinnacles of video game development when it comes to graphics, when it comes to gameplay innovation. Nobody ever comes out and says anything regarding those games, and these people directly compete with these developers every day. And again, Larian Studios makes a specific type of game. I'm not looking at that game and thinking, wow, this game, I think that game looks like garbage. But that's just me. Everybody's not looking at Larian Studios and thinking that the games that they create are the best games in the industry, because again, they make very specific types of games for very specific type of video game players.
RPGs.
I'm not really.
Would you agree with the Metacritic?
The game is number one. I don't hold Metacritic to any type of pinnacle, or I don't hold that for me to say if a game is good or not. But even if you look at the game, I've been seeing a bunch of dumbass arguments online about how this is the game of the generation, and people are comparing it to Tears of the Kingdom or Metroid Prime Remaster or other games that came out this year that got over 100 reviews, whereas this game only has 13 or 14 reviews.
Yeah.
The more and more reviews that come in, the score will either go up or else it will go down. But I'm not about to speak on a game that only has 14 reviews and be like, oh wow, this game's Metacritic this has to be the best game. But no, this shit only has 14 reviews.
Yeah, I mean, we do know the reviews have put it ahead of Zelda. It's currently got a 97, which makes it the highest rated game of the year.
You know how I feel about these reviewers, because again, I highly doubt any of those people finish the game. That's one of my major problems with these journalists and with these reviewers. Most of these people don't even finish the games that they play.
You've completely missed what you've done there, Dan.
What did I do there? I've already spoken to Major about his reviews. I talked to Major, and I know Major finishes the games that he plays. Major doesn't come. I'm not worried about nobody's feelings at all. But again, these people who I'm speaking on, they've come out multiple times in multiple interviews, and they even tell you themselves, we don't have the time to finish these games. Most of the time, we get halfway through the game, or if they don't even get that far, then they tell you that is what they base their reviews on.
Oh, mate, I've heard it gets worse than that. IGN, last year, there was, Pokemon, I think it was Pokemon Scarlet and Violet, because I was in touch with Nintendo at that point, and we were asking for codes, and they said, no, we're not sending any codes out. But IGN and several other outlets, Games Radar, Eurogamer, Kotaku, they'd already published their reviews. So my question was, why have they got their reviews, but you're saying you don't get codes out? How did they get them? They said to us categorically, this is from Nintendo, by the way. This isn't some random indie developer. This is Nintendo themselves. They based their review off the trailers that they saw on YouTube.
Oh, dear.
Yeah. And that's why I don't take Metacritic or have any people. That's why I play these games for myself before I go read a review, before I look at a review, especially from any of these big sites. Most of these big sites, again, you can go online, you can do the research and find these articles. These people already admit to not even finishing the game or finishing or getting halfway through the game before they base off, and then they run a Metacritic and they write these stupid reviews that people clamor over, and that's how they base a video game's worth to them. It's based off a number.
Yeah. The IGN article where they were saying developers are panicked, they're actually referring to one developer. His name's Keanu Reborn. He's an indie developer who had a panic attack. He suffered quite badly. He was hospitalized for intense imposter syndrome. That's quite a bad thing, though, dude. He had such a bad panic attack, he had to be put on an IV drip.
He got to get put on an IV because Larian Studios came out and put out, quote-unquote, a good game?
No, he had imposter syndrome. So imposter syndrome is basically where you have a big panic attack that you're not good enough. And you basically your brain shuts down, and it feels like physical nausea.
Where did people come from, man?
It's a recognized
mental illness. Where did people come from, man? I'm saying based off the fact of if you're an indie developer, right?
Yeah.
Even if you're a developer, period, and if you get into this industry, I already know that all developers are not the same. Ubisoft developers are not putting out a banger like how Naughty Dog is putting out. Activision Games
I'm not expecting to be anywhere close to what.
And that's what I'm saying. Who are these people? Like, this is. Look, man. People may not like what I got to say or whatever, but society is super soft. If you got to get put on an IV drip because you just seen somebody put out a good game and you feel like you can't compare, hey, bro. You don't get no look. I do not care. I don't care. You need to suck it up, get back in the lab, keep working and practicing on your craft and get better and be the best that you can be. Stop trying to compare yourself. I don't got any type of worry or I'm not sad for any, especially not a grown man that's out here, oh my gosh, Larian Games is, no, bruh, get over it.
Yeah.
Well, I will add that apparently his doctors told him that he has maybe 3-4 years left in his career. I don't know how they came to that. But a lot more, he said, my career as a game dev will be pretty much over if I have another panic attack. He said IGN was reporting the article that IGN posted, who was telling his story, which is pretty ethical reported. He called IGN classy for basically making...
Oh, man. That's crazy, Major. I don't know how you read that thing.
Wait, the doctor said
that? What was that?
I said, I don't know how you read that with a straight face, and I think Nightmare's asking you, did the doctor really say that? That's crazy.
Yes, he did. I've got the link. It's in the schedule sheet. But, yeah, he did actually say that. He said, right, okay, so I'll read this again for the people that aren't immediately laughing their arse off, because the people, it's hard to get it out with Baz laughing. So he claims that IGN, the article they wrote that developers were panicking, was about him, and that he had a panic attack because he had to be hospitalized for imposter syndrome, and the doctor said he only had 3 years left in his career, and his career would be pretty much over, and then he blamed IGN for making fun of him and called them classy.
Hey, man, good. All I got to say is good riddance. If you're a developer...
I feel bad for this guy, but at the same time, I don't.
I'm not, look, man, good riddance. If you're in a career like that, and if you steadily comparing yourself to the point to when you got to end up in the hospital, you don't belong there.
Yeah.
Get you another job, man. It'll be all right. Ain't no way I'm about to have any type of sympathy for a grown man. Oh, my gosh, I got to go. No, bro, get over it. That's crazy.
That's probably shade, but it's brilliant.
Yo, you got people out here. No, maybe because listen, right? Like there's people out here fighting day in and day out for their country, steadily fighting, losing limbs. These people are out here really, really in some shit. Meanwhile, you got this dude having to go into the hospital to get put on an IV because he looked at a video game release and realized that right now, at this point in time, that he cannot compete. But again, if he's an indie dev, if he's new into the industry, he has nothing but time to continue perfecting his craft, get back, you know what I'm saying, just get back in the lab, and just keep practicing and just keep learning.
Mm. I wasn't going to laugh at him personally because I was trying to maintain a straight face. But I'm glad you did it for me. I was trying to be professional, I'll have you know.
Professional.
You didn't
laugh my arse off
at this guy.
Yeah, he's professional.
Oh! Hey. Oh, smart! Chloe with the shades. That was a low blow, Chloe. That was a low blow. Anyway, after that ridiculousness, I'm looking forward to actually playing Baldur's Gate 3. We have reached out to Larin. They didn't have any in the first wave because literally everybody tried to get a code. So I'm hoping in the next wave when they start releasing console versions, I'll be able to jump on it and post a review. That'll be coming later. Starfield is obviously in September, so hopefully we're going to be around the same time because I'm going to be 100% Starfield. Anyway, there is an author who is suing Apple and the Tetris company for the Tetris movie, which I absolutely loved. But apparently they used his book without his permission and made a movie out of it. They've borrowed, literally borrowed everything in the book. Dan Ackerman apparently released his book, The Tetris Effect, in 2016. He is now suing Apple for using a pre-release copy of the book to make the movie. Now, as reported by The Guardian, Ackerman alleges that the company refused to license its IP for projects related to the book, discouraged producers from adapting it, and sent him a strongly worded cease and desist letter. Ackerman then claims that a Tetris company, Maya Rogers, started working on the Tetris movie screenplay in 2017, literally using this book as the source material to write the movie. The Tetris movie is obviously based on the true story of the race for license, the patent in Russia. Ackerman's book, meanwhile, presents the story as a Cold War guerrilla with a political intrigue angle. According to Ackerman, Apple has literally borrowed every single specific section and event of the book. There is one-to-one comparisons with what he wrote and what the movie is in the movie. And he is going to be suing Apple for millions and millions of dollars.
Okay. Hang on a minute. If they're both based off the same thing, then it's going to be a little bit difficult for the information in both pieces of media to be different, regardless of whether or not it's been one's been taken from the other.
Yeah, but the issue is that not everything in the book was 100% factual. Some of it was just written to drive the story forward. And those plot points are also in the movie.
Yeah, that dude better get a nice little payout. I don't think it's gonna go to court. There might be like a settlement, because if Apple knows that they did wrong, I feel like they just gonna be there and do whatever he wants.
Yeah, it'd be under the table payment.
Yeah, I believe he gonna get a nice little settlement, man. That's crazy that those people would actually do that and think that they would get away with it without even asking this dude. They could have just asked him and probably could have gave him a couple million and they would have been good to go. But now they got to pay even more money because they wanted to cut corners.
Yeah.
Fairly stupid idea, but there you go. There was also the argument this week that Hideki Kiyami wants Japan to start using J-Action, just like it uses JRPGs. That's what the Platinum Games executive has addressed recent criticisms of the term JRPG. He says he wants Japanese developers to lean more into that style. He's expressed interest in Japanese RPGs in their decline in the West. However, with the rise of Xbox in the last few months, he likes seeing them working on other stuff as well. Naoki Yoshida told Skill Up this week, shout out to Skill Up, that he wasn't a big fan of the JRPG term at all, saying in the past it felt like a discriminatory term in negative connotations. However, in a recent interview with Platinum Games CEO headquarters in Osaka, Japanese designer Hideki Kiyama, who curated Bayonetta and Devil May Cry, was asked if he shared those views, and he said the answer was extensive. He argued that the term is something Japanese developers should be proud of, and he said, to be clear, I have a positive sentiment when it comes to the term JRPG. Okay. My creative life up until now, there'll be two things that left a huge impression on me. And the first of these was a localization issue with the manga of Fist of the North Star. He went and just explained it in depth. I'm not going to go into the whole thing, but he said basically that he wants the J in more terms, so Japanese developers to start implementing their own styles into action and other genres. Your thoughts? Do you think it has negative connotations, or do you think it should be something they're proud of?
I think that they should be proud of that, because again, whenever you look at these JRPGs or these Japanese games or these games that come from Japan, they always have a distinct play style. They always have a distinct art style. The Japanese make some of the best games within the games industry, and they tell some of the best stories. I was just playing, like we just spoke about how I've been playing through the Yakuza series. There is no other games on the market that play so serious but yet so wonky at all. Like, aside from Saints Row, you can look at Saints Row, but that'd be a poor comparison because the quality just wasn't there. So again, all these games play differently, and I feel like they should be proud to be some of the best developers on the planet when it comes to making some of these video games. And I don't think that they should look at that as some kind of derogatory or some kind of racist term that people are using. I think the fan base, the people who play those games, love those games, and they love the developers. And that's mainly who you see having these conversations. I don't think any gamer that loves Final Fantasy or loves any of the Square Enix games, from Octopath Traveler to Bravery Default to Tales of Vesperia, or, you know what I'm saying, to Tales of Arise, any of these games, any of these great JRPG games, I don't think these people are having these conversations in a bad faith or like they're trying to use that term in a bad way. I just don't agree with that. Because we've been hearing this for a while, ever since. I think the first person I heard speak about it was the guy who makes Final Fantasy, or the guy who was in charge of Final Fantasy. That's when I first started hearing about it. I'm like, why? Why are you trying to get away from this? Like, your role-playing games are not like Western role-playing games.
The argument he still has, and he's still pushing that argument that he thinks is racist. JRPG.
I think it's just because, you know what I think it is, though, Major, just before you go, right? I think it's just because all these conversations started about the time when we started hearing about Square Enix saying, our games are not selling as much as we would like our games to sell. They aren't meeting sales expectations, right? And I think if you dig more into it, or if you look at it from a psychological standpoint, it's just like what I said earlier when I said Larian Games or Larian Studios makes a very specific type of game. I know I'm not going to be into that game. I'm not going to be into that, like, what do they call those? CWRPGs or whatever they call those games. I'm not into those types of games, right? So most gamers,
they know, again, JRPGs play a very specific type of way. So they know if this is a JRPG, when they're looking it up, I'm not buying that. So I think the psychological standpoint comes in as they want to get rid of JRPG or get rid of that title because they know if people are looking at, or if they're looking at games to buy, if they know a game is a JRPG and if they know that they don't like JRPG, they're not going to go out and buy a JRPG, which will hurt sales. I think it's more into that whole conversation, and that's just my thought process.
And I think you're right. So changing the name the way they seem to want to isn't mm-hmm. going to change that. And if anything, they are probably going to end up hurting themselves even more because you will then end up with people looking at, like you said about the JRPG, they'll look at a game, see that it's a J-Action game, and be like, well, now I don't want to play that because it's going to be crap. But obviously, that name is going to be given to a wider variety, so they're going to end up hurting themselves if they do that.
Right, but I think, so the reason why I said what I said, right, yeah, it does, but if you play them games and if you think about it, right, Final Fantasy 16 came out, and it was classified as a JRPG. Most people that play that game knows that it's not a traditional JRPG. It's not even a traditional Final Fantasy game. So if you look up the game and if you don't see JRPG on, you're like, you know what, I think I might try this out. This looks like it's not a JRPG game. While it's still kind of sort of a JRPG game based on the fact that the Japanese developers create the game and it has some of those same tropes and some of those same themes that come out of Japanese games, I feel like, again, the psychological standpoint, even if they trick people into going out and buying these games and these people end up taking the game back to GameStop, they still got their money. So they still made money. And I think that's all they care about is they're trying to get those sales because Square Enix has been saying for months or for the past year or so that their games are not making – it's not reaching the expectation, that they're not making their money back for these big budget games that they've been out here putting out. And I think that's what it's all about.
Oh, yeah.
You have to also look at the fact of what Square Enix is currently doing with their business. For them saying that they don't want to have JRPGs because it negatively impacts their sales, you also have to then look at the sales of Final Fantasy XIV because they try to take JRPG, the original turn-based role-playing games with the original Final Fantasy, and make them Western. And there is a clear lack of interest in that because Final Fantasy 16 did not do very well at all. I think it was about 3 million units they sold. They were hoping for 9. So they're really short of the mark. You also have to then look at the way that they're now working with a Western company like Microsoft and bringing Final Fantasy 14 to Xbox. They're clearly interested in moving more into the West, is what I'm saying. They clearly are looking at Western influences, Western publishers, Western developers. They are looking to move into the West, but the thing is that Square Enix is a Japanese company. They need to maintain some element of their originality, something the thing that made Square Enix Square Enix. I'm all for them being on Xbox. Clearly being just on PlayStation is not a good thing because if you look at the stats, PlayStation players typically don't play JRPGs anyway. They don't really play Final Fantasy, like the newer ones. 15 did really poorly on there. They clearly weren't interested in Final Fantasy 16, albeit some of the reviews may have played a part in that. We reviewed it, didn't like it. There are elements there.
Do you think Final Fantasy 16 being next gen only also hurt the sales?
Yeah.
There's a lot of people out there, regardless of PS5 hitting 40 million consoles sold, there's still a lot of people out there who do play JRPGs, but they just don't have a PS5 yet.
Yeah, and I think that a lot of the players, when they launched the PS5, it was meant to be, like, all the marketing stuff was for FPS games and racing, like Gran Turismo, and everything was being upscaled. There hasn't been a significant number of first-party big games at this point that you couldn't play either on PS4 or weren't coming to PC that would really grasp the interest. And I was speaking to other developers last year when we were doing interviews and stuff. I'm not going to give the guy's name or where he works, but he was a senior team lead at a very, fairly large indie developer in development studio. And his opinion was, why would I buy a PS5 when they've only got 3 games on there at the moment and that console's been out 2 years? He said, I'm a PlayStation player, but I have absolutely no interest in what Sony is offering. And he was about to release a game on PlayStation. He had no interest in playing the console. That should speak words to Sony. If our own clients don't like what we're putting out, what is going to make the customers who are still on PS4 make the jump and buy more consoles? Yeah. And that's why I think there's a clear disconnect between what Sony's currently producing and the games and the sales that are currently affecting their third-party partners like Square Enix. Because if you look at their release schedule for next year, they've got about 9, I think it's about 8 or 9, live service FPS games. None of it, I mean, Wolverine, we still don't have a release date for that. But that's a possibility. That could be one of the few, if any, single-player games we get on PlayStation next year. The majority of it is first-party, well, not even first-party, the third-party Sony-published live service shooters. The majority of them, like 8 or 9 of them are live service shooter games. That's not originality. That's just spamming free-to-play games. That isn't
they're trying to go all in. They're trying to take that bag. They're trying to get that money.
Yeah, they're going to make a lot of money off them, but it's not going to be. That's not going to entice PS4 players to jump over.
They might, but again, if you can put out, I think it'll do more than enough to get some PS4 players over. Because remember, a lot of them PS4 players are only on PS4 because of Call of Duty and because of Fortnite. So if Sony can break into the industry or break out and get at least one of the 9 games, because again, all you need is one to catch a foothold. And that's going to be enough to get a lot of people, because a lot of people are starting to get tired of playing Fortnite. I'm getting tired of playing Fortnite. I'm not trying to play Battlefield. I think Battlefield came and fell flat on its face. Call of Duty, I've been playing Call of Duty since Call of Duty 3 on 360. So almost damn near 20 years I've been playing Call of Duty. I think people are ready for something to come out and people want something new, which is why you see Ubisoft trying to come out with their own little Call of Duty knockoff brand, a live service game.
Yeah, Tom Clancy new one. Yeah.
Yeah, so I think all they need to do is get one of them games to go live service. And I think me and you both know that's all a live service game is for, is that they're trying to come out and trying to make money off people. That's all they want is money. And as long as one of them games can be good.
Well, they're going to need it, though, because there was reports last week. And I did some of my own research into this, and I was having arguments with Sony ponies about it all week, that Sony are broke. And they are broke, because if you go to their stock page for the Sony group, and I'm not talking about PlayStation, I'm talking about Sony as a whole, their profit for last year was their net income was $118 billion. Their profit at the end of 2022, I'm not talking about the financial year, I'm talking about the actual year of 2022, was only $2.32 billion. For the entire year, they'd given out $116 billion, and they were left with $2.32 billion. They are clearly not going the right way as far as staying profitable, because the slightest problem, the slightest dip in anything, which I think is why they were so vehemently against Call of Duty going anywhere, is because they're paying out so much when they're not making enough money. They're spending so much money to remain in number one, like untold amount of money, just to keep that top spot. But it's then becoming a struggle where they're not releasing any games because they don't have the spare income to make any games. And obviously that's for Sony as a whole. That's not just Sony Interactive. That's the entire Sony Music, Sony Pictures, Sony TV, Sony Radio, the whole lot, everything, $2.32 billion in profit. And the majority of their shareholders are asset management companies. The only reason to have an asset management company, so many of them, and the top 6 shareholders of Sony are all asset management, is because you're paying off debts. And all those asset management companies are taking large chunks of Sony's income.
If Sony was able to get rid of them, then they'd have a lot. They would legitimately be number one. But they've paid out, they've borrowed so much money to make stay in number one, it's now becoming a problem where they are running out of profit. So
they're trying to buy the way to the top instead of actually work for it.
Yeah. And people say, oh, Sony does this, Sony's so great. But you have to look at what they've been doing for the last 10 years. Why are they so successful? Because they've been paying for exclusive licenses. Not for making their own games. Yeah, they have maybe about 5 or 6 exclusive their own titles. But the majority of the stuff they that they own, they don't use because there's no guarantee they're going to sell well, so they don't even try. And the rest of the money, they're giving away to asset management companies to pay off the debts of the loans for the licenses they just bought. So like with Activision Blizzard, they were paying Activision like $100 million, $200 million a year to get exclusive rights to exclusive content for Call of Duty. This is the last year they're going to be able to do that because obviously at the end of 2024, there's going to be an end of a license. And people were wondering why the Modern Warfare 3 is coming out this year when they said last year there's going to be no Call of Duty in 2023. We're going to skip a year and move forward. The reason they're doing it is to get the license rid of. Microsoft are now paying them, and now they're bringing out Modern Warfare 3 because as soon as that last Modern Warfare 3 hits, the exclusive license with Call of Duty on PlayStation is done. They only had one more game with that license. And now they have, now they're able to get rid of Sony a lot quicker. Sony would then, they, next year, you would have all the betas and stuff on Xbox as well. There's a lot of sneaky stuff going on with PlayStation. They're not all squeaky clean like people think they are.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like everybody knows that, that PlayStation was out here paying for these exclusive deals. Because, again, if you, like, if you look at history, all they did was copy Xbox 360 playbook. I don't know why Microsoft stopped going out buying exclusive deals. I don't know why they sat in the corner and then they decided not to fight back with as much money as they have backing them with you know, with Microsoft back and Xbox. But hopefully, I don't know. I don't want to see Xbox.
I think I have the answer to that because I've been asking myself that question as well for like the last few months since this whole ABK Microsoft thing. And now thankfully it's coming to an end. We can stop talking about it. But I think the reason I think what they did was Sony tried to compete financially. And Microsoft probably looked at it and went, go on then, do it. We'll sit back, we'll let you run it, keep our arms crossed, won't move, we won't budge. We'll let you do it and let's see how long you last. Now they can see that Sony's struggling. They're like, right, now we're going to put the money in. Now we're going to come back. Because now they're thinking Sony has serious like financial problems as far as being able to pay for first-party games. They've just lost Activision. Sony's going out there and trying to get all the best games on their platform, which is, you know, exclusives are a bad thing overall, in my opinion, but I understand why they're necessary. So Microsoft was like, right, I think we've gone far enough now.
Let's but why do you think exclusives are a bad thing?
Well, because it also prevents, like, this, the whole, I mean, I understand why it exists. It's so consoles can obviously attract more customers, but it also limits the amount of outreach that people can actually play together. For example, with Sony releasing all these live service games, none of them are going to be on Xbox. So if you've got friends on Xbox, you can't play with your Xbox friends.
So I mean, again, everybody has a wallet. So I get everybody ain't got the money to go out and buy all three at one point. But these consoles have been out for 3 years, and they're only $500. Even if you work at McDonald's, you can put money away. You can put $20 away to do this and do that.
Chloe,
I know people who work at McDonald's and who own all three consoles. I know people who live in the hood and they own everything. That's not an excuse. If you want something, you have to budget. I've been budgeting. Everybody in the world budgets to buy things that they can't get day one. So all I'm saying is, just to finish my point is that if a game is exclusive and if I want to play it and if I don't have an Xbox to play the next Halo, or if Call of Duty one day goes exclusive to Xbox and I don't have an Xbox, nothing is stopping me from saving up my money or from me to going out and get an Xbox. I don't like that whole conversation of, oh, well, what about these people? I don't care about these people. Gaming is a very selfish hobby. It's very selfish. All I care about is my enjoyment. I don't care about little Timmy back over in Brazil who doesn't have a PS5 if he can't play Spider-Man. I get to play Spider-Man. That's all I care about. I don't care about little Timmy over in Brazil. Like gaming is a very selfish hobby, but hold on, right? So let's say everything wasn't exclusive. If everything's not exclusive, what's the point of me? Like, I like having, like, this has been going on since Nintendo and Sega. Like, I like having other consoles because other consoles bring video games and other things to the table that's not around. I feel like if you get rid of Xbox and PlayStation and Nintendo, and if I could just get a PC and just play everything, the games that we get right now, I feel like gaming would just die because there would be no competition.
I mean, I will agree with you there, but I do think that the exclusive thing about the like games being exclusive on consoles, it does foster a negative attitude, which is why we have the console war. Why?
Because these
so
people are weird, Major. That's because these people are weird, Major. Like, why does a piece of plastic make people jump out the window and call somebody out of their name? Like,
I'll give you an example of what I'm talking about, right? I was having a discussion with people saying that Sony only has Spider-Man 2 this year. And that is not a good look for Sony because they really should be, with the success they've had, looking at, like, mid-level AA games and stuff exclusive for their console. They're going to start releasing stuff first party. They need to actually bring some more stuff out rather than just having one game, because there is no reason for me to buy a PlayStation 5. And I mentioned the reason why, because Sony is financially struggling. That may be the reason why they're doing it. This person came back at me saying, show us your bank account then. What do you mean, show me your bank account? Show me your bank account. I bet you don't have $2 billion. No, I don't have $2 billion. Does that mean I can't play? The stupidest argument I've ever heard.
Right. No, but that's what I'm saying, though, Major. Those people are weird, and it's across the whole spectrum. You got Nintendo people who console war. You got Xbox people who console war. But that's why I said those people are weird. Nothing you say about me owning the PS5 or nothing you say about Sony has ever made me jump out the window and call you out of your name. Like, I do not care about a plastic box. A plastic box is not my identity. It doesn't pay my bills. I use it for entertainment because I love video games.
Yeah.
And I said video games. I didn't say PlayStation video games. I didn't say Nintendo video games.
Oh, we know that. We know that. There are going to be people out there
that
are
like,
going to call you
But that's what I told you, though, Major. You get, like, I warned you months ago whenever you dipped your pinky toe into that community. I told you, you're going to have to block and just ignore these people. Because unlike you, with a job and with a business, and you got stuff to do, some of these weirdos, they will argue with you all day.
Oh, I know, mate. I've had conversations that have gone on days. And it's, like, yeah. Somebody yesterday was saying about how Xbox is a developer. I went, no, they're not. Xbox Game Studios is their collective studios of developers. Xbox itself is a publisher. Oh, who published Gears of War 5? Xbox Publishing. No, it's Xbox Game Studios. I went, no. Xbox Game Studios as a comp is the Xbox division. But Xbox Publishing is their publishing department that publishes. Like, people do not understand how game development works. And they want to argue about game development. It's asinine and stupid. And you do not know a damn thing about game development until you have spent at least a year working in that side of the industry. You do not have a clue how games work, how development works, what publishers do. People think several people this week thought publishers just give money over. That's not the job of a publisher. Do you think they just sit there with a paycheck and wait to be paid back? They wouldn't have staff. They'd just be sitting there twiddling their thumbs. They're responsible for Q&A, optimization, audio engineering, mocap, voice recording, distribution, marketing. They do so much work that just because a publisher isn't sitting there twiddling their thumbs doesn't mean they're not doing anything. You're an idiot. You don't understand game development. Stop having an opinion on it. It's like the people who are saying Atlas Fallen is trash, even though they hadn't played it. It was 2 weeks before launch, and it's a guy with 5 followers and no profile pic. You don't have an opinion until you've played it. Stop
but
having opinions on stuff you don't know about.
I mean, in all fairness, I think you're in the wrong for getting into an argument with somebody with 5 followers.
That's
why
I told him, Chloe. That's why I told him.
And no profile picture.
And that's why I told Major months ago, I'm like, Major, you're going to see these weirdos on this app, and you're not going to believe the things that they're saying. Why do you think, Major, anytime we speak on stuff and anytime you and Callum get knee-deep in the game development issues or y'all start talking about stuff that I know I don't know about, I'm not going to pretend to be a game developer. I'm going to sit back, shut up, and see if I can learn something. Most of these people, though, they're going to argue with you about stuff that they know that they don't know about, all in the hopes of giving you an L or trying to get some kind of internet W. But I'm going to shut up because I want to hear what Nightmare has to say because I haven't heard Nightmare say anything except for like 10 words the whole – Nightmare, what do you think about this, man?
Well, there's definitely a reason why I don't start arguments on Twitter. And it's because it's all a bunch of, like, seven-year-olds that haven't gone outside in 5 years and barely know anything about what they're talking about.
That's true.
Yeah. It is true, but a lot of these guys, like, have jobs, and they act like pets.
They got families, Major. Major, these dudes have families and children. They out here raising the future. And you see how these people act on their over plastic boxes.
Yeah. I mean, I've been called Xbox and Pony in the same thread. And I think that's an accomplishment I deserve a pat on the back for. Because clearly,
yeah, welcome to the club.
I'm on the right track to annoying everyone at the same time.
Yeah, welcome to the club, man, you know. I got to worry about some little weirdo on there, you know, all the time coming after me. And, you know, then I got to shut them down because unlike most of the people on there, I actually play the video games that I talk about. I play a lot of games. I use my free time to play video games. I go on there to talk about video games. A lot of them people, though, you know, like, even if you prove them wrong, that's still not going to do anything. That's why you never see me going back and forth about Xbox or a PlayStation. I'll argue with somebody over who killed who in Grand Theft Auto 3 or Vice City. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'll talk about video games. But I'm not about to argue with you over something that Xbox is doing. I'm not getting paid from Xbox. I'm not going to argue with somebody.
Yeah, there's still people think that we get off. Oh, there's people think that Xbox fans get paid. The Microsoft developer at Bethesda said that they paid chills or something. They love paid chills because they do all their marketing. But that's not doesn't legitimately mean that Microsoft is out there paying YouTubers and journalists and people on Twitter to give it a positive opinion. That's stupid. But there's still people with that opinion. It's like Destiny 2 stuff, right? The Destiny 2, everyone's saying, oh, Destiny's dead. It does feel like the game at the end of its life because the updates have been absolute trash the last two. I have not enjoyed them. But the reason that they're so bad at the moment is because Sony's all asking or getting Bungie to do all their live service engineering for every live service game that they're producing. All nine of them, plus work on Bungie. And they haven't given them any more money to do so. That's why Destiny 2 is in the toilet right now. It's because they're so overworked. But the argument is then with the Destiny community that Destiny fans, if they like it, they're paid shills. If they don't like it, like there is a complete disconnect. People do not understand the way anything they have their specific industry. They play one console, one game. But there was somebody arguing me last week about Call of Duty, right? And he was arguing that Call of Duty is, like, the best game ever made. I went, mate, you need to go, like, outside and touch some grass, seriously. Like, there's far better games out there than Call of Duty. But that's all he played. And then he tried switching it to other games he's never played and giving his opinion on games he's never played. If all you play is Destiny 2, then you don't have an opinion on any... You shouldn't have an opinion on any other game because you have never played anything else. You haven't been out there. Same with Call of Duty players. You don't play, like, if all you play is Call of Duty, you can't then talk to me about Final Fantasy or Starfield or anything. People arguing us this week about Forza. The next Forza game will not have split screen. But they don't play Forza. It's like threads of PlayStation fans arguing that and making fun of Forza for not having split screen. When GT7 has never had split screen, it's been broken since launch.
Yeah. I got a question for you, though. I don't want to... I'm not about to get into the what about it with PlayStation or GT7. How do you feel about Xbox getting rid of split-screen stuff when Xbox has been known for split-screen stuff? Like, how does that make sense?
I do think that's...
I utilize split-screen and couch co-op. I was just playing Double Dragon with my son, remember last week or the other week when I told you about that. I love couch co-op experiences. Just because some people don't have family or they don't have friends, I feel like they write in the car. But for somebody who actually talks to people and socializes, and I play games with my family, and I share my hobby with my children, or even with my wife. My wife plays games. We play Call of Duty on split screen. Gears of War on split screen.
You're
lucky. See what I'm saying?
I can't get my wife to play anything other than Crash Bandicoot. That's all she'll touch.
So how does that make you feel, though? Because, again, like, I've been an Xbox fan since Xbox 360. I haven't been there as long as you've been there. But how do you feel about it? It seems like every time a game comes out, it seems like they're taking stuff away that we love about Xbox and the stuff that they've been doing for decades.
Yeah, I mean, I do know the reason why they're doing it, and I will agree with some people that have said the issue is the Series S, because there is issues with Baldur's Gate launching on the Series S with split screen.
Uh-huh.
The issue is having, like, equal footing. So, like, on the S, splitting the screen is causing the game to slow down. Now, we know Microsoft, when they say if something's not working at launch, they're obviously not going to ask their first-party Turn 10 studios to start, like, telling people, like, the Series S is broken. It's a first-party studio. They're not going to badmouth their own console. So they're obviously not saying it. What they do instead is they cancel mode and then say it come out with the next update. Same thing they did with Halo, because they couldn't get split screen to work on the Series S version as well as it did on the X. They can't say the problem is our own console, because that is extremely bad. So instead, they'll just say it's not coming yet. We'll upload it in a separate interview. It more likely will eventually turn up. It's the same we did with Halo, although we've got co-op, but it's not as good as it should be. I do think it's a misstep, and I do think if they're going to release a game that doesn't have modes that you'd expect, like split screen, like, in, for example, with Halo, campaign co-op, Forge, do not release that game. Finish the game first, because that is the biggest criticism that non-Xbox and people that want to get into Xbox but just feel that Microsoft keeps screwing up, that is their biggest issue, is that games never release complete, and we keep seeing it. And the reason for it is the Series S. Now, if you're going to continue with the Series S in its current state, being that it's, I mean, 1440p is not a problem. 30 FPS isn't really a problem. The issue is, one, storage, and two, power, because it doesn't have the same capabilities as the X. It is a far weaker console. It's not capable of handling more than 2-3 large games, if that. And if they're going to continue on that, they need to release another version of the Series S and just can the current one. Because that's what's screwing up, or get rid of it all entirely, because that's what's screwing up a lot of bigger games that are capable of running on the X, great, but Microsoft has a policy, you cannot release a game that looks different on both consoles.
Mm-hmm.
So if the game works great on the Series X, like, we'd have Baldur's Gate 3 on the 6th, on Xbox, if it wasn't for the fact that Microsoft not allowed them to remove split screen, or not allowed them to remove certain features that have to be palatable with the X. Microsoft is saying, no, you can't do it. You either release it all in the same, or you don't release it at all. So now Larry and I are having to spend another 6 months trying to fix it. And I've been hearing February, March time for Baldur's Gate 3 on Xbox users, if you're interested. But that's the reason why this, like, Larry issues with have an issue. We saw the same issues with Halo. We're now getting the same issues with Forza. It's really a Microsoft choice. They're not going to come out and badmouth their own console, because they want people to keep buying that console. They're not going to say the Series S is the problem, or we can't get these games on, because that is bad marketing. They're going to absolutely can. The cheaper console that is actually selling better than the Series X is. And it's what people would just stop buying it if Microsoft came out and said, our console shit. So they're not going to do that. So instead, they'll say, we'll release it in waves, and the next update will be include split screen or whatever, when they get it working, essentially. But that's my thoughts, anyway. But if anyone wants to chime in before we jump into a break?
No.
Okay, no. Anyway, when we come back, we're going to be talking a couple of little bits. I did want to speak about our game that we're currently working on, because we are going to be launching a trailer in the next 6 weeks. We have just dramatically increased our staff numbers. We now have 11 developers at Buzzsaw.
And we are working to produce a trailer, which is going to be a short 30 to 40 second teaser trailer, which I'm hoping to have completed by mid to late September. And then we're going to be launching on Kickstarter and going back through publishers and getting that sort of. When we come back, also, we're going to be talking about the Gran Turismo movie and THQ Nordic Digital Showcase launched last week. There was a couple of pretty exciting titles that was announced last week, including The Last Ronin and the new South Park game. When we come back, don't go anywhere.
Pain, I would do that all day. I step back from the game and keep you out of harm's way. Risk it all for the game, but it take more than one person. Two people, one till I feel the same when you hurt. I was still in middle school when givens had pretty will. Bodies were dropping before we ever knew about the drill. We gon' be family, no matter what way this go, brother. From the ugly corner where everybody betray each other. I let you hangin' in jets, I let you bang on my set. Put you before my own flesh, like why the hell and do that? In the streets, I'm so tired. Devil on my shoulder, you whisper what I told him.
Angel, don't fly so close to me. I'll pull you down eventually. You don't wanna lose those wings. People like me break beautiful things. Angel, don't fly so close to me. I'm what you want, I'm what you need. You don't wanna lose those wings. People like me break beautiful things.
Curses of disloyalty, we breaking it. Lost my dog, got him back. Took him in, we shaking back. Struggle never broke us, it just made us who we is. Lost us, taught a lot of lessons. Made the wins feel like blessings. Family, all you got at the end, hope you get the message. I ain't tryna make it without you, but if I got you, then I got you. This ain't about me, this about the whole cake. We can take a slice on a different day, just keep your plate. God, family, hustle, goals, heart, mind, body, soul. Watching out for street signs on a narrow road. Heaven at the end, praying for the lost souls with my angel.
Don't you know, don't you know, don't you know, don't you know, I don't wanna let you down. No, I'll never be perfect.
Never wanna see you hurt dead. You should go, you should go. Get away back. 100 on the dash now. Wish it didn't have to be this way.
Welcome back. This is episode 113 of the Talking Heads podcast. Me, host, the manager. I'm going to quickly discuss our upcoming game, and I'm hoping you guys will check out the trailer when it drops. If you'd like to invest in the game, because we do need to find a little bit of money to make the game, send us an email, hello@gamesinquiry.com. The animated trailer, though, should be up around the end of September. It's only short. Basically, gives a little teaser as what we're going to be sending to publishers as well. So you guys will see it directly after. But it is a third-person survival shooter. If you like the movie Attack the Block, Die Hard, games of that nature, movies of that nature, then you'll probably enjoy this. It is a narrative story. It's going to be set in a London tower block. You're fighting werewolves instead of aliens. And there is a big narrative adventure. And at the end, there is a tie into the possible future games if we ever get to make them. But the story and scripts have all been written. We've got several artists now working for the studio who are currently producing artwork for it, and a couple of animators who are doing trailers and stuff, and obviously music and stuff as well. There's a game that just released called Stray Gods. An audio engineer, the producer on that, is now working on ours, as well as a few other guys who have previously worked on other games, rather large ones as freelancers. They're now working for us as well to get this project made. So when we find a publisher and everything completed,
the trailer we send to them and what we'll be putting out to the public. And hopefully then the Kickstarter will launch straight after to get at least a vertical slice done, which is basically a game demo. And then that will be going out to the public and you guys can either Kickstarter it or purchase it or play the demo on Steam when it launches. If you're interested, it is hello@gamesinquirer.com. I still need another animator and two more programmers. If you are interested in joining us, send us an email with your CV to hello@gamesinquirer.com and I will be in touch with you very shortly. But I want to thank out Montiero and Rogelio, who are currently leading the art, and they're doing extremely good work. There is a few bits more we need to do because we are making character models from Monday, as well as screenshots and some concept art and stuff. And then we'll be coming the trailer, which will be launching mid to late September, if we can catch up and stay on target, which should hopefully be made public by the end of September. If not, it'll be at the Game Awards, which I'm trying to get onto if the trailer's finished by then, which it most likely will be. But yeah, that's it. I know you guys have seen the some of the images we currently worked on, the logo and it, and the beginning of the key art. Quick bit before you before that, saying too much about it. What are your thoughts on it?
I like the art style that you're going with. It reminds me of I don't know if you remember Xbox 360 Penny Arcade or the Xbox Live Summer Arcade. I used to play a game on there called Alien Hominid or like any game from like Behemoth Studios, Castle Crashers and stuff like that. That's what the werewolf artwork that I've seen. That it looks like it'll be really good. Hopefully you're not just doing PC releases and hopefully you can get that.
Oh man,
yes sir, because I would definitely come out there and play and support your game and, you know, share it online for people to play. Because I love indie games. I'm still under, I still got the idea that indie games is nowadays what pushes the industry forward with brand new ideas and gameplay innovation. Because again, most of these AAA studios, they get caught and stuck up in their ways. They're scared to take chances. They're scared to try to switch up the gameplay. And I just, I love and appreciate indie game developers. So I'm hyped to see what you guys can come up with later on.
Yeah, I mean, the art style originally was meant to be like Spider-Verse, which is sort of like the art style we were going for. We kind of had to switch it up because animation would have to go by frame, which is extremely difficult because, for example, Sony had like 200 animators and artists working on that movie, and it took them 3 years. We've only got 3 or 4 artists, so we've had to change the art style slightly to more pencilized version like you were talking about. Which it still looks fantastic, the ideas the guys are coming out with, and they're sending me stuff regularly. But what they've done is really, really nice looking, and I'm very pleased with the direction that they've come with, or come at me with, and showed me like this is what we're thinking. I'm very, very pleased with it. It's definitely something that I think looks very nice, and we're definitely, it's different from the majority of games that released, because obviously this isn't AA or AAA title, it's an indie game. We're not going for the big budgets because there's only a team of that. I'm trying to get about 13 to 14 people on total. We are producing some very good music. We do have voice actors. It's going to be voice. It's not text. There are voice actors involved. We've got one guy who's just finished drama college. This will be his first one, but there is another 3 people that have done voice acting before. They're not big names, but they know what they're doing. And I'm hoping with that as well, we might try and get, if we can get the funding for it, I'd also bring on a professional, somebody who's got a
lot.
Let
me know, hey, listen, man, look, you let me know if you need a Big Mouth TV person to appear on there, you know, to say something crazy. I got you.
I mean, it is set in London, so the American accent might throw it off just slightly.
I could be a little tourist, man, just for where, you know, like, if you got a tourist character in there, you know, that's about to get murdered.
Or somebody moved to the UK. It
just
happened.
Yeah. I mean, it is set in a London council estate. There is 7 or 8 main characters being voiced, and the rest is like 1 or 2 lines of dialogue for extras. But the whole point of the game is you rescuing all the survivors and getting them out front to the police. But of course, you've got to deal with all the werewolves, and they have different stages. So in the beginning of the game, they are like just turned. So you're only going to get like maybe some claws or fangs. But as the game progresses, they get more and more wolf-like.
Oh,
and we're not.
Cool.
I'm not talking Twilight wolf here. I don't want to see them on all fours. I mean actual like werewolf. So on the back decks, some of the transformation styles as well, we use in movies like The Howling for reference, if you guys remember that, The Howling. And also there's shows like Being Human, the werewolf transformations there. Like, those are our points of reference for transformation. So we're not going like Twilight. We're using 80s, 90s werewolf transformations, like the bones cracking and the jaws and everything. But as the game progresses, they'll become more and more wolf-like. It's basically like a virus that the longer the game goes on, and there is different endings as well, I will say that. There is different endings. So there will be, for example, if you kill too many people who are unarmed, not werewolves particularly, but like there's gang members running around and they're trying to get you because of something you did in the beginning of the story. I'm not going to spoil it. There's also police. There's going to be riot police chasing you down hallways because they're trying to... there's a narrative bit where you're wanted by the police and they're trying to arrest you and you need to escape from them using different methods. There's also gang members. There's werewolves running around and you need to rescue survivors and get them out of the building without getting caught yourself. So that's where the survival aspect comes in. You have a mobile phone which you're using to charge, so you can use it for lights so when you're in dark places, or to call in support if you need some of your friends to come and help you to get you out of the situation, or to give you an idea of how to get away from the place. Is there an exit we can use? Is there somebody's flat window or some like flat doors unlocked, so I can go hiding, that sort of stuff. And then there's limited ammo, so you only get a pistol, but you only have limited ammo with that pistol. So you're not running around with like bazookas and machine guns. It's a council estate where there's going to be baseball bats and knives, and those are the weapons you are going to predominantly be using. One of the main weapons, though, is the samurai sword, because obviously attack the block is what the game is loosely based on. Well, I probably said too much.
Probably. I was like, you might want to stop now before you...
All of this will be in the Kickstarter anyway. We're going to have to divulge everything, so we want people to know what's going on. I'm not going to spoil the story. I'm not going to tell anyone what's going on. The script, this first draft is done. But I'm, at the moment, I need to go back and do a second draft to make sure I've nailed everything possibly. Because I'm the one writing the script. I've got people doing storyboards. They just produced their first one for the trailer today, which I've had a look at. And we're finalising that before we move on to the next one. But there is a lot of work to do. But I'm not going to spoil the story. Most of all the features and mechanics will be in the Kickstarter when it launches. The sort of stuff will also be going out to publishers. So if you want this game made, write to your favourite publisher and ask them to publish it. Or send us an email of what publisher you think we should go with, and we'll send it to them. And if they agree, then we'll come through them. It's whoever's first come, first serve, and whoever offers us the best terms, essentially. Anyway, moving on this week for the last bit of few news, we've got THQ Nordic Showcase just dropped. There was several games on here that were previously unannounced. One of which was South Park Snow Days, the new South Park game that's coming from Question Games, a four-player co-op.
That game looks fire.
Yeah, that game looks brilliant. It is coming to Switch as well. It's not just PlayStation, Xbox, and PC. That'll be releasing in 2024. I have been hearing mid to late 2024, so don't expect it around, you know, April when the first round of big games starts launching. Possibly looking around August, September next year. Outcast as well was another big one, which is looking very, very cool. Basically, there's no confirmed release date. There is a Steam page up. You can go check the article and check the Steam page for that. There's also Space for Sale, which I'm very interested in. You play as a property developer in space. You basically construct habitats for alien clients and then sell them to them. It looks amazing. It's being developed by Mirage Games in Sweden, which are best known for Little Big Workshop. If you've never played that game, go check it. Space for Sale does have a closed beta test currently, which you can sign up for. The link is in the article. Trine 5, we've got more information on that. I know you guys, the Trine articles that we've posted in the past have done extremely well, so clearly there is an audience for it. We seem to be one of the few outlets that are actually talking about that game, but it looks terrific, and I'm looking forward to it dropping. We also got more news on Alone in the Dark, which kind of went more into the characters. There's also The Last Train Home, which I'm really looking forward to, which is a survival game. They did just drop the first gameplay trailer yesterday. It's only coming to PC, though, which sucks. I'm hoping it eventually releases on Xbox and PlayStation as well in the future. Tempest Rising, we do have an article that just dropped as well today,
So you can go check that out. But there is a trailer on the website as well for the complete rundown. And Recreation, the new racing track, which is basically has a bit more of a narrative story than the previous game. You basically build your own racetrack. It's kind of a narrative adventure with four friends, which just looks incredible. Gothic Remake was the new the remake that players have been asking for. That game is coming out. There was a trailer that had taken a look at the game's arena battles, which just looked insane. There is no confirmed release date. We do know it's coming to PlayStation, Xbox, and PC. And last up was Titan Quest 2, which is being developed by Grimlore Games. It's currently in development. There is no current release date given, though, but it does look really, really nice. And that was all for the THQ Showcase. They also had the Handy Games stuff. There wasn't too much in the Handy Games Indie Showcase. We only had a couple of people message us about it, but if you're interested and you want to learn more about the Indie Showcase, we'll post more content later on. Movie news this week, though, and TV show news. Apparently Twisted Metal set an audience record for Peacock. It's one of the most watched comedies in Peacock history. Which, well, judging by the early reviews, people hated it, but it's been the most binge comedy premiere to date, apparently, according to NBC.
What show is that?
Twisted Metal is a comedy?
Apparently,
yeah, I've been hearing a lot of people say that show is pretty good. I'm not about to subscribe to Peacock for $1, $5 just to watch Twisted Metal. I'm going to need something else to get on there before I jump on there just to watch.
So if you're into wrestling, they got in there as well, all the WWE stuff is on there.
Yeah, I ain't watched wrestling since, like, high school.
Yeah, me neither. I don't bother with it. But I'm looking, trying to find a copy in the UK. If anyone knows where I can actually watch it, because we do have Peacock over here. We usually get stuff on Sky Atlantic or Paramount. They usually air the US stuff that we don't get on normal TV here. But I haven't been able to find it. So if anyone knows where I can find a link to watch it, please send it to me and let me know. The show apparently is doing extremely well. It's meant to be a comedy. I thought it was meant to be an action show, but no, it's a comedy, which isn't something I'd expected. It was a high-octane action comedy based in the original Deadpool scribes, Reese and Paul Wernick. It obviously stars Anthony Mackie. The show obviously includes also Stephanie Beatrice, who's in Brooklyn Nine-Nine, who is one of my favourite shows ever. And it was written by Michael Jonathan Smith, who's also serving as a showrunner. I'm looking forward to seeing where they go with. I'm hoping they release another season of it, which I think they might do. I don't think there is currently any plans, but I'm thinking with the current success it's got. I don't know if you guys have actually seen it yet. Have you watched it?
No, I haven't seen it.
I don't have Peacock anymore.
We don't get Peacock over here, which sucks. I wish they'd start releasing some of these in the rest of Europe. It's just in America. We're missing out on a lot. But the new Gran Turismo movie, though, last up. The movie just released is extremely mixed reviews. I want to give a shout-out to Jan Marlborough, the actual driver the movie's based on, because I've had a conversation with him in the past when we started talking about the Gran Turismo movie. He was very supportive of us covering it. Lovely bloke. But unfortunately, this movie is not doing his journey justice. And some people have said it's one big ad placement. They hate it. And there's one particular scene which I find is particularly appalling. They've used a real-life spectator death to push the movie forward as a plot point.
What?
So this came back from an actual event that happened. There was a crash in, I think it was in March 2015 in Germany, where a car landed into the crowd and killed someone. That person was severely disfigured from the accident. And he was pronounced dead immediately. That was involving Jan Mardenborough, who came off the track and his car landed in a group of spectators. The film producers have used that as a plot point in the film, which I think is absolutely appalling. They've paid no respect to the person that died whatsoever. And they've used it to gloss over something that happened as a highlight of Jan Marlborough's career. Now, that was a terrible accident that happened, but they've used it as motivation for his character. And I don't know quite how to feel about this even being in the film. Personally, I think even including it is disgusting.
Wait, what would the character be motivated if he had just killed someone, basically?
They've used it as character motivation for him to get better as a driver. It's the opinions I've heard on it, because I haven't even watched the film. Judging by the review scores, I don't think I will do. But this is in the film, and people have said it is absolutely disgusting. I want to get your guys' thoughts.
So,
if
he's the footage of him killing somebody in the crowd.
Yeah.
As.
Well, no, they've recreated him, not the actual.
But I mean, they've used that as motivation. What?
Yes.
I don't get the motivation part because it's like, oops, I just killed someone. I'm very motivated to be a good driver now. Like, what?
No, not as it's so basically they've used it as a plot point that he calls an accident and then he doesn't feel like driving anymore because he's feeling guilty about it and he's having a hard time coming to terms with it. But then he gets bought out of it and he says it was an accident. And they've used that someone actually dying as a plot point in the movie. I mean, the whole point of the film is him joining the GT Series tournament, which was a big tournament in the UK about a decade ago, where a bunch of drivers that wanted to become professional would sign up. Sony would pay them as a TV show, and then they would train, and then they would compete against each other to essentially become, get a professional contract and join like the GT Series in Tokyo, which is where Jan Mardenborough now is. He had an accident during one of those tournament races where his car went through a barricade, flipped, and landed on someone. They did not need to include that as a plot point. The whole point was about the series. Yeah, there could be arguments that they glossed over it, but you don't need to include that as a plot point. And they've specifically used that death without any reference, without any permission, without even checking with the family if they could. They've just put it in a film and have used it as character motivation for him to become a better driver. Personally, I feel that's appalling.
Yeah.
But obviously, I want to get... If I'm wrong, tell me I'm wrong, but...
I mean, I understand using something for motivation in that sense. However, using that is probably... Well, not probably. It's just too below the belt.
Yeah, I mean, it's used as a turning point. Some of the critics have questioned the way in which it was handled, particularly because they've re-timelined it. So they're trying to say that it happened early in his career when actually, in actuality, it happened later. And they've used that as a position to get him to actually move forward in his career. So they've changed the timeline of when it happened and how it happened.
To try and fit their own storyline.
Yeah. And it's just the Marlboro uses the tragedy as motivation to eventually lead him and his team to earn a third place finish at Le Mans, which is appalling. That is disgusting. In reality, what death occurred was in March 2015, and Marlboro and his team finished third in Le Mans in 2013, which is 2 years prior to when the event actually happened. But the movie is claiming that he went on to win Le Mans in 2013. Yeah, so they've repositioned what actually happened in order to fit a narrative. So I feel that is appalling of them to even do it. But several critics, especially from, I'm not going to say the Evening Standard, this critic is from the Evening Standard. Don't ever read the Evening Standard, by the way. I just hate mongering preachers. But details relating to a tragedy in Marlboro's life had been rearranged to give the final act extra welly. That's from Charlotte O'Sullivan. In the movie, Marlboro is involved in a race at Nürburgring, which has fatal consequences for a spectator. That involved Marlboro's car flipping, going over a barricade and landing on the spectator. A horrible accident. Jan is obviously naturally guilt-ridden. He still blames himself for that to this day. It is something that he's personally said in interviews. It is something that he believes is a freak of accident. And he still holds a tremendous amount of guilt. But apparently this led to a rousing pep talks from Jack and Danny, which in the movie couldn't be more upbeat. So the big tragedy led to the hugest of wins. They used it
as character motivation to make his character feel good about winning.
That's just... No.
Yeah. Apparently they suggested the incident of someone dying was you that helped propel Jan to greatness. It's not only false, it's reprehensible. And several critics have said to Sony, what you did is the worst nightmare turned into a movie fest. Shame on you.
Well, which if they had at least asked the family.
They didn't even tell
them. They didn't. If they had at least asked them, be like, hey, we're doing this movie. Can we get permission to use this? If not, okay, we'll do something else. But no, they were just like, eh, whatever.
Yeah. Not didn't even bother telling anybody. They just put it in. And they've moved things around to give the character motivation so we can have the big win and the fact that everybody feels smiles and happy at the end. Forgetting the fact that in, like, five scenes previously, he just killed someone. In reality, that happened 2 years later in a freak accident. And I don't think he raced for another year out of guilt. He was having, like counseling and stuff to deal with the guilt of it. Like, that was a terrible accident that happened. Somebody got crushed by a car. It is not a pleasant scene. The family are obviously extremely upset at what Sony's done because they've used someone's death as a plot point for a character having a happy ending. A real-world death as well. It wasn't made up. It actually happened.
Yeah.
Honestly, I think that's absolutely disgusting. But,
alright,
last few things, comments from you guys before we wrap up.
You've chosen a really weird point to end on.
Well... We always do movie news last.
No, I know, but you're like, you've just gone, this is what's happening in a movie and it's wrong, and, yeah, now we're going to end, it's just, anyway.
She's like, Sony made a movie plot of someone dying. Anyways, see ya.
Anyway, time to wrap up. Pretty much.
that wasn't my intention. But, yeah.
I know it wasn't your intention, but it's just quite, yeah.
Yeah. Maybe I should have ended it with Twisted Metal then.
Oh, well. Bit late now.
Yeah, it's a bit late now. Anyway, we're going to finish. Thank you, everyone, for joining us this week. We hopefully should be back next week. Thank you to Bam.
Hey, man, you know, it's always a pleasure getting together talking about these games. Catch you next time.
We will. Chloe, I'm going to see you in, what, 2-3 weeks?
I don't know, is the honest answer to that. The session move still hasn't been entirely confirmed, so I don't know what's going on post. I definitely won't be here next week, because I'm away at Jake's. But after that, I've no idea what's going on.
Okay. Thanks. We'll figure it out later on. And thank you, Nightmare, dude. Pleasure.
No problem.
Anyway, we will be back next week, same time, same place. Don't forget to check out the website, follow us on all socials, and visit me on YouTube. Please give us some more follows, because I've only got 3. it's a dead YouTube channel. I haven't used it in a long time. Anyway, we'll be back next week for episode 114. Thank you all for joining us. Stay safe, and I will see you in next week, hopefully. Fingers crossed. Happy gaming. Take care. Bye.
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 It's the Talking Games Podcast.